streets are screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we want to step back and look at the massive bailout going on the part of the Federal Reserve, the central bank, and its key role in the whole process. And what's the likelihood that it will succeed? Succeed in what? Well, succeed in preventing the system itself, financially in particular, from crashing. Because that's what this bailout is all about, you see. All of this money that you hear about being thrown at business, small business, medium business, large businesses, all of that is going through the Federal Reserve funnel. And from the Federal Reserve, it goes to the big private banks. And they make all the loans to all these non-bank businesses, small, medium, and large. You know, right now we've got, $670 billion committed to loans and grants to small business. That's businesses with less than 500 workers. We've got another $600 billion going to medium-sized businesses, corporations with workers. Well, it was up from 500 to 10,000 employees, but now the Fed is raising that to 15,000 employees, in other words, making it available to larger companies, and they will soon add to that $600 billion as well. And then we have the $500 billion that went to large corporations on top of all of that. Okay, so we're looking at trillions of dollars here going to businesses, and they keep expanding these loans and grants. And make no mistake, you know, they call a lot of this, half of this, loans, but it's going to be converted to grants. In other words, free money. Trillions of dollars to businesses to bail them out, and it's all going through the banks, the private banks, you see. It's a monetary approach, a monetary policy approach. It's the same approach that was used in 2008-09. In other words, don't get the government to really spend directly and bail out the rest of us. No, everything goes through the banks and through the big corporations, and hopefully they will then trickle down some of it to the rest of us. You know, the only direct spending going on is the $500 billion CARES Act that's composed largely of extended unemployment benefits, the extra $600, through July only. After that, that expires. And watch it. They won't extend that one. They won't add to that one. No way. What you see on May Day here is what you're going to get as far as the working class, middle class bailout. That's it. But they'll keep throwing money at businesses and corporations as long as they have to. It's a real unbalanced bailout. But that's the way these bailouts occur. Now, it's going through the Fed, all this money. Bonds are created by the Treasury that justify or backstop the Fed to create electronic money and give it to the banks to loan out to non-bank businesses. The fundamental thing about all this is not just the magnitude of it, and it's not even just the fact that the Fed is now not only bailing out banks, but bailing out non-banks, a mandate it never had to bail out all of the capitalist class with its monetary policies. That's radically new. So the magnitude's radically new. The bailing out of non-banks is radically new. But what's also radically new, that this is all a pre-bailout of the system. You don't have a banking crash and crisis yet. But the bailout is designed to prevent it. You know, in 2008, we had the financial crash first that then dragged down the rest of the economy as the banks froze up and did not lend, and non-bank businesses had to lay off, and they went into a downward spiral. That was 2008-09. Now it's reversed, you see. You've got a crisis in the non-bank side that's threatening to spill over to the banking side. And all these bailouts should be understood as a preventive, a preemptive effort to head off another banking crash. Well, how would this lead to a banking crash? This way. Non-bank businesses over the last 10 years have loaded up on a tremendous amount of corporate business debt. The Fortune 500 companies alone have loaded up on $10 trillion of corporate bond debt. Okay, that's not talking about loans. We're talking about corporate bonds here. Corporate bonds come in the form of bonds raised. In other words, a company issues a bond, and it's a guarantee that they're going to continue paying a certain amount of yield or interest per year until the bond matures. And investors buy these bonds. They give the company actual cash in exchange for the bonds. So the companies raise cash. But then they have this liability that they have to pay the bonds over a period of time. And they have to offer an interest rate to attract the investors to buy the bonds. Now, if you're a company whose performance is poor, or you're already in debt, or for whatever reason you're not properly managed and it's obvious you're not making much money, in order to sell a bond, you got to offer the investor a very high interest rate, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10, double-digit percent per year. Okay, big risk. Well, there's some investors who want to take on a big risk for a big return. So the companies that offer these high interest rate bonds are what we call high yield bonds. Yield means the interest. Or, more accurately, junk bonds. Companies that aren't in good shape and probably can't pay it back and have to just keep rolling over these junk bonds are very fragile companies economically. They're not well managed. Their future prospects are not that great. But investors still buy their bonds because they want a big return. They're willing to take a big risk. Well, over the last 10 years, this has accumulated. The junk bonds and junk loans, we're talking about trillions of dollars in the U.S. alone, trillions, that now have to be paid. Principal and interest has to be paid by these companies at a high interest rate at a time when the companies have lost their revenue. At the forefront of this are the oil and energy drilling companies, the fracking companies, who took out lots of junk bonds. And what did they do with it? Well, some of it they plowed into drilling and taking more oil out of the ground, which contributed to the global oil glut and crash going on, by the way, right? And they paid their investors, you know, by taking out the junk bonds as well. So they got no cash. So they got these oil and energy companies have to sell more and more oil in order to continue to paying their debts, the principal and interest on their junk bonds. They're not the only ones, not the only industry. Other industries that are in the same situation are the retail industry, you know, big box retail companies, you know, like JCPenney and Macy's. Sears, of course, has already gone out of business. Lord & Taylor, Neiman Marcus, all of these big companies, big name companies, have been taking on all this junk debt for years now to stay afloat. And now they have to repay that principal and interest, and they got very little, if any, revenue coming in with which to pay it. If you don't have revenue to pay the principal and interest on your debt, you default, which means you simply stop paying principal or interest or both on that debt. Well, when you default, legally, you can be forced into bankruptcy. And whoever loaned you that debt can force you to sell off whatever assets you got left. And, of course, all the workers are laid off and their pensions collapse and so forth in the process. So we got these entire sectors. You know, the airlines, the travel industries are now in that situation as well. You know, entertainment of all kinds, you know, casinos, et cetera, sports teams, et cetera. They're all in that same situation. They've been borrowing this high cost or selling this high cost corporate debt, high interest costs, and now they got to keep paying that debt. You see, that doesn't go away, even though your revenue may go away. So now they're how are they going to pay it? Well, this is where the Fed bailout comes in. You see, the Fed is sending them free money with which to continue paying their principal and interest on their debt so that they don't default and go bankrupt. And when they do, should they do, all that debt is then transferred to the bank's balance sheets. It becomes their debt. And when that happens, the banks don't want to lend out anymore. They have these big losses. And if they don't lend out, well, then other businesses that aren't in debt can't get working capital and loans to continue, and they have to cut their costs, which means mass layoffs. Now, that's exactly what happened. You know, as the banking system crashed and froze up in terms of lending in 2008, the rest of the economy began shutting down. And that's why the Fed stepped in to bail out the banks. It threw $4.5 trillion through its QE program onto the balance sheets of the banks in the hope that, well, okay, you got all this extra cash, banks, you can cover your losses and keep lending. Well, the problem was they didn't lend very much to small, medium businesses. They only loaned out, even though they were bailed out by 2010, they only loaned out to the biggest corporations, and a lot of them just took the money offshore and expanded offshore. That's why we got such a weak recovery, you know, for 6 years. We didn't get jobs back until 2015 level that we had in 2007. Okay, so back then it was the Fed that bailed out the banks and through the banks slowly the rest of the economy. But it took years. It took 5-6 years. And it wasn't a robust recovery. It was like 60% of normal recession recovery. That was then. Well, you know, the contraction, economic contraction, is many times worse now than it was in 2008-09. That's why the Fed is throwing all this money at the banks to fatten out their balance sheets in case there's losses and defaults coming, right? And to go even further and to try to bail out those companies that may default. So it's a two-pronged strategy here to prevent defaults and bankruptcies that would bring down the financial system that's going on. And it's a blank check, you see. The Fed will throw as much money as it thinks it can or needs at businesses and banks right now. It's a blank check. It's not a blank check for the working class, right? It's a temporary stopgap to the working class until they can force them back to work, which they're trying to do now. You know, the fact that they're forcing people back to work is a signal that they will not extend unemployment benefits. You know, that they will not give you another check, income supplement check. You know, so that was a one-time shot. Now, the bailout of business is an open book, an open checkbook that will continue. All right, so that's the fundamental thing you got to understand of what's going on. This is a bailout engineered by the Treasury and the Federal Reserve, all of it going through the private banking system, all these loans. It's not from the government. It's not from the Fed. It's from the private banks, you see. And they're just going to skim off their 5% fees and other fees in the whole process. That's why bank stocks are doing quite well, you see. The bank profits are supposed to go up now because all this money is flowing through them. I'm talking about the, you know, the J.P. Morgans and the Wells and the Bank of America and Citigroup and so forth. Those big boys, right? They're making it hand over fist here. This is a big windfall for them because of the way we're bailing it out. It's not like, you know, the 1930s where the government itself actually bailed out the whole rest of the economy. The Federal Reserve, the central bank, was sent into a corner, bad boy, you know. Nothing's going through you. You were partly responsible for the Great Depression. You know, why do we give you more money? You know, go sit in the corner, put your dunce cap on, you know. And that's what happened to the Federal Reserve. And it was all a fiscal, direct bailout by the U.S. government. All those New Deal programs, you see, were all designed to put income in the hands of households and workers and consumers and homeowners and retirees. That was what the great, you know, the New Deal was about during the Great Recession. It was a bottoms-up Main Street bailout. And as people did better and spent more, well, then business got bailed out. It was a trickle-up, not a trickle-down. Well, 2008 was all trickle-down. And this is now the big trickle-down going on. And it's a pre-bailout, you see, before it all happens, before the crash comes. But there's no guarantee that the crash still won't come on the financial side. It's a big gamble here by the Fed as to whether this helicopter money for businesses will actually result in a recovery of the economy. Now, what we got is a big hype going on, big story, big hype here. The spin is in. By the administration that, oh, this is going to be a V-shaped recovery. In other words, it's going to snap back and we'll be back to normal here by summer. And that's how they're selling, forcing everybody going back to work, you see. That's the way to get back to where we were. Well, we're never going to be back to where we were. There's never going to be the old normal. It will be a totally new normal. A new normal with a largely stagnant recovery for years, a large overhang of unemployment for a long time going on, and all that money being thrown at businesses and banks is predicated on the assumption that they're going to spend it and not hoard it. You see, they're throwing massive supply, money supply, liquidity at the system in the hopes that it will be spent. Because if it isn't spent, you see, you're not going to have the stimulus that will generate the recovery, and it won't be spent. A lot of it will be hoarded. You know, a lot of small businesses are gone. They will not come out of this. That will hold back the economy in and of itself. Other businesses are going to return people back to work very slowly, very carefully. And in the meantime, they'll find ways of cutting costs, meaning cutting labor and benefits and so forth, you know, until they actually get going again. This happens every time there's a recession. Business finds new cost-cutting ways, and they will do that. You know, and that's another reason why you won't get a full return of the 40 million now who are out of work. Yes, it's 40 million, you see. Officially, 30 million on unemployment benefits out of a labor force of 165 million, 30 million. Right? Ah, but the Economic Policy Institute says there's another 13.9 million who have unsuccessfully been trying to get unemployment benefits or for whatever reasons haven't applied for them yet. They're out of work. There's no job. So we already got over 40 million. You know, but 40 million out of 165 million, you know, that's roughly a 25% unemployment rate. In 2 months, we have an unemployment rate that took 4 years to reach during the Great Depression of the 30s. You know, it wasn't until 32, 33 that you had 25% unemployment. It took 4 years. Well, here we've done it in 2 months. The magnitude and the rapidity of the collapse is so significant that we're in new territory here, new territory. No one really knows how with that deep contraction, what the consequences are going to be going forward for economic dynamics in the system. No one really knows. No one really knows if fiscal and monetary policy will be successful in stimulating, you know, a recovery, certainly a fast recovery. No one knows. I say no, because business is going to hoard a lot of that money. They're going to open up very slowly, even if the order is go open up. And the same with the consumers. You know, workers are very uncertain. No one knows how long this virus is going to last. And all these viruses always have second and third waves, and it looks like the U.S., which is the global center of the infection now because of mismanagement, health mismanagement, opening up prematurely, especially in the red states, you know, where business has the greatest voice. No one knows, you know, whether a second wave or a third wave even is going to occur. And these viruses always have second and third waves, right? And premature opening up will just accelerate that possibility of a second or third wave. But those who argue V-shaped recovery, you see, assume that the sole fundamental problem here is the virus effect on the economy. And once that goes away, and they assume there'll be no second, third waves, right? As soon as that goes away, well, then it's all over and everything snaps back to where it was. Well, it's not going to happen that way, because this thing is not simply being driven by the health crisis. No, that's the factor that precipitated the more rapid downturn and accelerated that downturn, but the U.S. and global economy were already on the verge of a recession. I mean, go back to 2019 and look at, you know, the U.S. record, economic record, right? We have a manufacturing recession for 6 months. We had a nine-month contraction in business investment. We had defaults by median family on credit cards at 8-9%. You know, when it's normal 2%, showing that all this boom on credit was coming to an end. And we had the trade war, which collapsed, you know, trade contribution to GDP. You know, we had government spending going mostly for defense, you know, that didn't employ that many people, defense sector. So the economy was very weak, and so was the global economy. You know, global trade under Trump's trade war and natural developments had pretty much stagnated, and global GDP was shrinking everywhere. And commodity-producing economies and emerging markets, you know, oil and commodities of various sorts were in recession. So the red flags were everywhere in the U.S. and globally on the eve of all this. And then the virus hits, and it just, in my view, it precipitates and accelerates the whole contraction deeper than ever before. So if it goes away, if the virus should go away, which it won't, you know, the fantasy will be over by summer, it should. If that should happen, there are certain dynamics already set in motion by the deep contraction, the rapid and deep contraction, in an already fragile U.S. and global economy that will continue. It's not over, even if the health crisis is over. Now, those who say V-shaped recovery are really arguing it's only a health crisis, a virus crisis, and they're arguing, secondly, that it's going to be over soon. That's the only way you get a V-shaped recovery. But if it's not true, if their assumptions are not true, that it's not just a virus effect, that there are fundamental developments going on in the economy, slowing it down, and we would have been in recession anyway, if that's true, right? And then that is even a normal recession that was coming is being exacerbated by this deep, rapid decline. Well, then V-shaped recovery is a fiction. It's a fiction. You know, we just got statistics this week of 4.8% GDP contraction, you know, in the first quarter. Most of that was, you know, just in the last month, the March, you know. And now we have all these forecasts about 30-40% contraction in the second quarter. Even if they start opening up and going back to work. 30% contraction. You know, I'm talking about Morgan Stanley Bank and Goldman Sachs Bank, right? I'm talking about, you know, even the Congressional Budget Office is 30 to 40% contraction. I mean, that's massive. We never had that much in one quarter. Never had that much. I mean, not even during the worst quarters of the Great Depression did we have a 40%, 30% contraction and a growth in unemployment to 25% in that short a time. We are in new territory here. No one really knows where that's going to take us and whether policies, fiscal monetary policies, can check it, even slow it down. We don't know. Because business is going to hoard and consumers are going to hoard. Do you really think people are going to jump on airlines and fly around the way they used to? No way. The airline industry, you know, we gave them $58 billion bailout because they had given $43 billion, all their cash in recent years, to their shareholders, and now they don't have it. You know, they were a big money machine for shareholders. All the money they made, they just, you know, passed on to their shareholders, right? And now they had no money, so we had to give them, taxpayer, $43 billion. Yeah. And the same with Boeing. You know, Boeing screws up, makes an airplane that crashes, loses money, and now we're fully bailing them out for that as well? Hmm? And you could, you know, look at all the other, you know, even the cruise industry, which isn't even a U.S. industry. You know, it's all foreign-owned. And Trump is talking about bailing that out. You know, hotels, a lot of them are foreign-owned, the hotel chains. They're not owned by the United States anymore or U.S. investors anymore. And we're going to bail them out? Well, look, no one's going to start running around to hotels and traveling on airplanes and even going to entertainment the way they used to. You know, you think people are going to rush back into the movie theaters? No, that's changed permanently. Entertainment? You think you're going to fill up the football stadiums the way you used to? Certainly not in the rest of this year. No, the spending patterns have changed permanently. Permanently. What about universities? You know, we send all the students home here before the end of the year. And, well, you know, they paid for a full year. Are they going to be able to get their money back? You know, usually under contract law, you know, if you don't deliver the service, you got a right to get a refund. Well, you know, now they're asking for refunds. The students are asking for refunds because they were sent home, and justifiably. Well, that whole business model of universities, that's going to radically change too, you know. We're moving to a remote kind of economy. And the same with distribution, with food. People getting food distribution and everything, you think they're just going to drop that and go back and go to their grocery stores every weekend? No. The whole economy coming out of this is going to undergo fundamental changes. And in the process of that defining itself, it's going to remain weak. You know, another argument against V-shape. You know, another argument is that businesses are going to find ways to cut costs and restructure during this whole process. Just as consumers aren't going to buy as much as they used to, and businesses aren't going to invest as much as they used to, and banks won't lend their own money the way they used to. They'll lend the government money, but not their own. They're going to be very careful about that. Everyone's going to be cautious about buying, investing, and lending, and so forth. And that means a slow recovery, very slow. And that means the V-shape argument is nonsense. It really is nonsense. You know, and you see it even on behalf of so-called liberal economists. They're buying into this administration spin, right, a V-shape. Right? You want to get back to normal? Go back to work, is what they're telling people, no matter what. And once they open the economy, believe me, if there's a second wave of the virus, they will not close the economy again. No, because capitalist revenues are more important than people's lives, you see. And that's what they're going to do. It's going to remain open. And they'll just tough it out in terms of another wave of deaths here. Okay, so lots of reasons why, you know, there won't be a V-shape here, recovery, because the virus will continue, one. Secondly, business is going to hoard the cash and the loans because they're uncertain about the future expectations of profitability. It's what they always do when expectations of profit are low, risky. Workers are not going to all get back to work right away. And when they do, if they get jobs, you know, they're going to be very cautious about their spending patterns, too. A government is going to reduce its spending after this. Yes, coming after this in 2021 is austerity like we've never seen before. They're going to make us pay for the bailout, us meaning, you know, non-business people. Well, that's what they did under Obama, you know. You know, the whole Great Recession under Obama is a good litmus test and template for what's coming now, except now it's writ large, you see. Now it's going to be even more, a greater magnitude and severity. But, well, what happened under Obama? Well, he comes into office, $787 billion rescue bill in 2009, you know, $300 billion of which went to business tax cuts. You know, they could have had another $150 billion in consumer tax cuts, but Larry Summers, who was the advisor to Obama, said, no, we can't have consumer tax cuts, you know, just business tax cuts. And $300 billion went to the states, and the states sat on much of that instead of hiring. And the rest was long-term infrastructure spending. Yeah, so a very, you know, poorly composed. I wrote a book about this. So, you know, Obama's economy, recovery for the few. If you're interested in that, go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, and you can order it. Not a very long book, but it predicted that there would be a very short recovery. A slow recovery under Obama, and in fact, there was. Yeah. And then what did Obama do after $787 billion? Well, he gave even more tax cuts to businesses, $800 billion in 2010. And then 2013, he just continued the Bush tax cuts worth $5 trillion over the next decade. So more tax cuts, more tax cuts, more tax cuts, right? And more austerity for the rest of us. After $787 billion and more tax cuts for business. What did he do in 2011, August 2011? Well, he cut social spending by $1.5 trillion. $1.5 trillion. They were supposed to cut defense spending by another $500 billion, but they just delayed and didn't really implement that. So $1.5 trillion. They give you $787 billion, then they take back $1.5 trillion. That's austerity, you see? And that's what they're doing now. Right? Except now they're putting in trillions, and they're going to try to take back from the rest of us here in 2021. And, you know, it's really ominous. On the Democrat side, you got Joe Biden, the leading candidate, right? Leading candidate. And who is he already showing he's bringing around him as his advisors and everything? Larry Summers, again, coming out of the woodwork, right? Going to advise Joe Biden. This is the same old Democratic corporate policy oriented party. Yeah, you got Nancy Pelosi pushing, you know, for more for the working class, you know, but that's her role in the House. She's got to do that. But when Biden gets in, should he get in, that's not guaranteed in my view, you know, should he get in, you just can see a repeat of Obama and his policies. In other words, we give two and three to businesses and tax cuts and loans and so forth, and one for the rest of us, and then two or three more for them and one for the rest of us. That's what they mean by bailout, you see. It's going to be repeat, which means a repeat slow recovery once again. And, you know, it's those slow, stagnant recoveries that lay the groundwork for the right wing to resurge again, as they did under Trump, right, and to come back in office again. So what are we going to do? We're going to get a Biden here who repeats Obama, and in 2024 we get someone even more crazy than Trump? Possibly. But that's a scenario that's been going on under neoliberalism for 40 years now. You see, the Republicans come in office, they ravage the economy on behalf of the wealth of the 1%. They funnel all this wealth to them. They destroy the economy, make a mess out of it. Oh, and then the Democrats come in, and what do? They continue to bail out the rich and muck up the whole reform of the economy. They don't do it and create the preconditions for the Republicans and the right wing to come back in. You know, that's the shell game that we've been seeing here for decades now. And it's going to continue. But each time it continues, the whole picture gets worse. It gets more severe and more difficult. That's what we're facing here in the U.S. And it's always a top-down bailout, a monetary policy bailout using the Fed, you see. But now the Fed is not just bailing out the banks, it's pre-bailing out the banks. It's not just pre-bailing the banks, it's bailing out non-bank businesses, especially those that have overloaded themselves with corporate debt in the last 10 years. By the way, overloaded themselves because that same central bank, the Fed, kept interest rates chronically near zero for all those years. And it was that chronic low interest rates that enabled and encouraged and incented non-bank businesses to load up on corporate debt. It was so cheap to issue corporate bonds at very low interest rates that they just kept issuing bonds and bonds and bonds and loading up on all that debt that now they got to pay for, you see, and now they got no revenue to use to pay for it. So they need all this free money coming from the Fed, you know, to fill their black holes. You know, and the leading edge, of course, is oil and energy and retail and travel and so forth, but it's the rest of the economy eventually too. All those that loaded up on cheap debt, borrowing cheap, right, but having to pay back, you know, at higher rates if it's junk bond, junk debt, junk loans, you know, CLOs, collateralized loan obligations, leverage loans, junk loans, same as junk bond debt, high yield bond debt, same thing, you see. And there's other forms of this. And we're talking about trillions of dollars that has to now be paid by companies who don't have the revenue to pay for it. So they got to be pre-bailed out, you see. And the Fed is not just waiting for those defaults to bail out the banks, you know, who would then have to take on all that bad debt. No, they're not waiting for that just to bail out the banks. They're not waiting for the banks to even have trouble. They're giving them this big cushion. And then they're turning and bailing out the source, the non-banks. You know, the Fed does not have a mandate to make these loans to non-bank businesses. It's doing it, and no one's saying anything about it. Yeah. But it doesn't have that mandate. It's not in its legislation. And especially it has legislation that says you shall not give loans, Fed, to companies that are loaded up with junk debt. You know, you are prohibited from doing that, the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve's doing it anyway. You know, and no one's saying anything about this. Because what's the alternative? Well, the alternative to the capitalist system is for Congress to write a blank check directly and make the taxpayer pay. You see, that's why the Fed and central banks were set up, so that the politicians would not have to take the bailout out of the hide directly of the taxpayer. Because the taxpayer would get very upset with that. And, you know, may not reelect these politicians. So they create a central bank, the Federal Reserve, to do the bailout on the side. And people don't understand how that operates. But basically it creates free money, electronic money, but free money that it then gives to the private banks to loan out. And it assumes that whatever it gives to the private banks to loan out will be multiplied by 10 times by the loans of the private banks, Yeah, that's another assumption that's not going to hold. Yeah, they're not going to loan out 10 times what the Fed gives them. So we got this big experiment, historic experiment, on several levels here. Pre-bailout, not just of the banks, but of private corporations, and not just the private corporations, but the worst indebted, most fragile and unstable private corporations. It's a bailout of the capitalist system going on itself at all levels, all levels. Yeah. And they don't want to give any more to the workers. That's why they're forcing them back to work, you see. Yeah. But my argument is, a lot of this money is going to be hoarded, and the spending investing behaviors are going to be muted. And corporations are going to use it to cut costs and not hire as many people back. And the business models are going to change. And the global economy is crashing anyway, as well, partly due to the virus, but partly due to other effects. I mean, look what's happening in global oil, $10 a barrel. All those drillers are going to be driven out, of the industry here. And Trump is going to buy their oil. Now, get this, right? He's not only going to buy the oil of the fracking companies in the U.S. to try to keep them afloat and put the oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. He's going to bail them out, buy their oil, and let them keep it in the ground. Well, come on, that's pretty phony, right? We're going to buy your oil, but don't take it out of the ground, right? And that's just a handout. Come on, call it like what it is. That's all. Just a handout to the fracking companies. Yeah. And the Fed is bailing out all kinds of investors. Mortgage investors are getting bailed out. Investors backing up auto loans are being bailed out. Investors backing up credit cards are being bailed out. Not just banks, you see. It's the capitalist class itself, the investors. Yeah. And it's all about trying to prevent a crash of the financial system. That's what this is all about. But throwing this massive amount of money is no guarantee that it will stimulate the economy. I think we're in for a long period of sub-growth, if that. Now, the way we define a recession is really by these economists, top-rated economists who are members of what's called the National Bureau of Economic Research. They're the ones who define a recession occurred, and then and they always do it after the fact. And they look at all kinds of indicators, not just the GDP. And I'm pretty sure they're going to declare that either February or March was the beginning of the recession. But they won't do that for another 6 months, probably. And the same thing when the recession ends, they will say, it's not two consecutive quarters of GDP decline. That's a rule of thumb that is very popular in the press and media, but that's not what defines a recession. But what they will say, what the government will say, is that, oh, third quarter or fourth quarter, the recession is over. Why? Because the way we define a recession, you see, when GDP stops declining, let's use that technical recession, popular recession that the government will refer to. When GDP stops declining, then the recession is over. Now, let me explain how crazy that is, right? In 2000, 2008-9, the recession began in December 2007, and the economy kept contracting throughout that period until June 2009. Then the contraction stopped. It wasn't falling further anymore. But just because it wasn't falling further, they say, oh, now it's over. We are, way below our normal output, and in the July, September, okay, the economy grew a little bit, right? Still far from recovering all the collapse. Recession should be over when you got back to the point you started when the recession began, shouldn't it? Oh, but that's not the way we defined it. We define it, and when it stops contracting, it's over. Well, that's, you know, that's manipulating the idea. Well, what they're going to do, see, after a 4.8% contraction here first quarter and a 30-plus contraction in the second quarter, it's not likely that the economy will keep contracting in the third quarter at another 30%. Not likely. If it does contract, it will be much less than in the second quarter, 30, 30, 40%. And if it doesn't contract in the third quarter, maybe it stabilizes, right, at that low level of having dropped 40, 48% or something, right? Half the economy shut down in the first and second quarter, and maybe only 10% of that half comes back in the third quarter. We're still 30, 40% down. But 10% came back, they're going to say, oh, look, you know, it's snapping back. In other words, what I'm saying is a kind of a technical thing about recovery here, too, that obfuscates and confuses people and allows the government and their talking heads to really mislead people. Oh, it's over. No, it's not over. You know, and you can even slip back. If there's another wave, you could slip back into a deeper a return to a contraction here in the fourth quarter or early next year. That can happen too. But the recovery will be even slow if there is one. And the possibility of a second dip or a third dip is very typical in these kind of deep contractions that occurred. We've had this happen before. You know, it happened during the Great Depression. Right, we had a major contraction, 29 to 33, 34. We had a recovery, partial recovery, in 35, 36, 37. But then we had a relapse again, back down into depression in 37, 38. And then a partial recovery again in 39, 40. You know, so you get these double dips. And these big contractions, very typical. After the financial crash in 1907-08, it was the same thing. You know, we got a very weak recovery for a short period of time, a relapse of a short, shallow decline once again, and then another short, brief recovery again, and another shallow decline, you know, bouncing along the bottom in the wake of the crisis. Yeah. Well, that's what I called in my 2010 book an epic recession. Short, shallow recoveries followed by brief, also shallow recessions, but multiple. And it wasn't until we got World War I that we really recovered from it. And the same thing in the Great Depression. It wasn't until World War II that we really recovered from it. Well, does that mean when you have these deep contractions that the only way you get out of it is a war? I don't know. Well, certainly, you know, the 2008-09 that we thought was severe is a dress rehearsal for what we're seeing right now. This one's going to be much worse and a much more difficult recovery. You know, because of the hoarding, because of the change in behaviors, because of, you know, expectations of not knowing uncertainty what's going to happen, affecting both investment and consumer spending, because of all of that. And because of the change in the business models that are coming, that we use less labor, all of that, because of the austerity that's going to happen and by government, no matter who gets election, all of that means that the recovery is going to be very weak and very slow and very protracted for years. That's the most likely, and it's not a V shape. You know, it's more of an extended U shape, you might say. As I wrote in my article here recently on my blog, jackrasmus.com, you know, the myth of a V shape recovery. And you can read it on Counterpunch, on ZNet, and Global Research, and other places, you know, European Financial Review, et cetera, on all those places, World Review of Political Economy, et cetera. And I'll be adding to that analysis, explaining even further, you know, in a couple thousand words, introducing the idea of debunking this V-shaped recovery nonsense. But watch out for the government manipulating statistics to make it look like it will be. But the real litmus test is, you know, are people getting back to work? Are they getting back to full-time work or just part-time maybe instead? Are they getting back to the same wage levels, or are they enduring wage cuts and benefit cuts instead? You know, that's the real test of whether you got a recovery or not. So I don't really see a recovery here that's V-shaped. You know? And it's all because of the way they're trying to rescue and stimulate the economy. It's all going through the Federal Reserve, you see. From the Federal Reserve, it goes through the private banks. You know, and it's divvied out by the private banks who game the whole system. They not only, you know, skim off the top, their fees and everything, their share of it all. They've used this whole thing to force the government to agree to more deregulation, financial banking deregulation. They've used it to negotiate with the government to eliminate all liability on their part if they loan to companies that then fail. In other words, not follow good banking fiduciary rules here in lending. Just give it to those that, you know, you can't rescue. They're going to go under anyway. You know, they want liability from that, and they want and got the government to guarantee them that if they loan to companies that fail, that the government will reimburse the banks. So they negotiated a nice fat deal for themselves, you see. The Chases and the Wells and all those guys. Yeah, they manipulated the system. And of course, we know, you know, in the original $350 billion to small businesses, they sort of divvied it out to their favorite customers, their biggest customers and so forth, and left a lot of small businesses in the lurch, didn't get any loans. And small businesses only have 27 days and they run out of money. Well, a lot of them have run out of money and now they're going under. And that's why they're desperate out in the streets, you see. The big banks, you've got to thank for that. Well, they threw another $320 billion at it. We'll see how the banks do that. Now there are some regulations, at least, you know. The original bill, the CARES Act, passed in March, you know, had an oversight, had an inspector, had an oversight committee, but Trump says, I'm the oversight. And then we got the big ripoff, right? Well, now in the second $320 billion, they're trying to put some controls on that because it got manipulated by the big banks and the big corporations. Yeah. And now they're arguing about whether they give any money to the state and local governments who are going broke. You know, they're spending a lot of extra money and they got no revenues coming in, right? So no revenues and big outflows of expenditures in the face of this crisis. Yeah, they're going to go broke too. But then you get you know, guys like McConnell saying, oh, you know, it's just mismanagement. Yeah, in fact, they got no revenues through no fault of their own. That's mismanagement. Yeah, no tax revenues. Yeah. You know, very, very clearly, this is a political thing with McConnell and Republicans because the states that need it most are the high population urbanized states, and that's the blue states. And McConnell doesn't want to give it to the blue states. Ah, but he's had to turn around. You know why? Because his statement, let him go bankrupt, has caused havoc and chaos in the municipal bond market. And that's investors and capitalists, you see, put their money there. And the muni bond market. And he caused a big uproar in that bond market and a big risk to the bond market. So, you know, the Fed is bailing out the muni bond market, but that's not enough. And why should the Fed bail it out when you got guys like McConnell making it worse at the same time? You see, they're not on the same same play sheet, the Fed and the Senate here. Well, you know, McConnell had to turn around. But they're still going to fight over that. And the Republicans are saying, oh, let's see what happened. We gave you $150 billion, state and local governments. You know, let's see what happens before we give you more money, right? Well, most of that $150 billion went to hospitals in those states. Yeah. They're going to have to come up with something. Pelosi wants $1 trillion. She won't get that much, but she'll get maybe half of that thrown at the states. they need more. You know, it's been 2 months here and virtually no revenues coming in, or very little, right? And huge outlays and expenditures. And if you want to do the testing that you have to do, if you want to get control over this virus, right, you're going to have to spend a lot more money on people doing tracing, you know, and conducting the tests and doing tracing and tracking and so forth. You know, it's going to be more expenditures by the states if you want to do something about it. So, yeah, they need a big bailout. And if they don't, they can go bankrupt. Yeah, they can go bankrupt too. And that will send a chill across all financial markets and bring us a step closer to another financial crash. So, yeah, they're going to come up with something for that, no doubt. But they're pushing everybody back to work so they don't have to do it again later in the summer. And pushing people back to work means they're accepting. They're going to accept the higher death rate. Yeah. So don't think this is over just because the capitalists are forcing everybody back to work. No. It's really only begun, perhaps. Certainly the economic consequences of this are going to continue to reverberate throughout the U.S. and global economy. This is not happy days are here again, folks. No. The war has only just begun. But we got a war president, don't we? Yeah, a war president invokes the War Defense Act, does nothing. Yeah. He wants everything to go through private sector. Yeah. Let them skim everything off the top. Yeah. I mean, who is this guy? You know, he's a real estate speculator, wheeler, dealer, commercial property, manipulator of finances and so forth. Well, you know, he's the epitome of the worst of the capitalist system in terms of behavior, right? And he's running the show, you see. Disaster, right? He's undermining their own system tremendously, and they can't get a grasp, a handle on him, right? Well, that's because the Democrats, you know, strategically are so inept. I mean, the epitome of their ineptitude is Joe Biden. They're going to send him out against Trump, you know? And it doesn't matter what the polls say, folks. It doesn't matter what national polls say, because all that matters in our quasi-democratic system is the Electoral College, and in other words, the half a dozen or so swing states. That's all that matters. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that, and we'll come back next week, and I'm sure we will have more interesting news on the global economy and unemployment and the crisis, but watch out for all this happy talk and spin about V-shaped recovery.